It's Monday.
It's March 23rd.
And the word of the day is excursion, which means a short outing taken for pleasure. Used in a sentence, we're doing a jaunty little $20 billion so far excursion in sunny Iran on a lark. It'll be fun.
Yeah, if only we could get its architect exterred.
Yeah. Also, it turns out that they all love us not. Honestly, it's sad times all around.
I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. And broadcasting delayed from America's far center, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, Iran So Far Away becomes more than a Flock of Seagulls song.
Virtual reality will get all the more virtual by existing less.
And the Trump cabinet gets some sweet new kicks for their foot clan.
But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, No Illusions, and Eli Bosnick. Gentlemen, happy March Madness. Any hot takes about the most wonderful time of the year?
Well, clearly I need to congratulate our very own Tim Robertson for kicking ass in our bracket pool. Tim, you are currently doing better than Heath at a competitive thing.
We're tied right now.
No, I know. He was ahead when I wrote that, and then now he's tied.
And I personally can't believe that the St. Louis Billikens didn't make it all the way. We were working with Robert Avila, y'all. The Robert Avila.
Yeah.
Still couldn't make it
tough
happen.
One.
Well, you know, when you press random, you get a random.
R.I.P. Billikens.
In our lead story tonight, Trump is totally winning that war. Already won.
Yes.
That war, in fact, doesn't need anybody's help and definitely doesn't need boots on the ground. In fact, hey, what war? Iran? Just a fucking figment of your imagination. Ooh, look at me. I'm oil. I'm a carbonized dinosaur. I'm a big deal. Fuck that. Fuck it. Nobody cares. Is now America's official Middle Eastern policy.
It is. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, it's tricky when our policy is a quantum state,
yes,
apparently.
Right.
We're in a war that we already won, that we're totally gonna win, mm-hmm, also. That's also an excursion to destroy the imminent threat of Iran's nuclear program that has been completely obliterated.
Since June,
right,
of last
year. A lot
year,
going,
yeah,
on.
Mm-hmm. Right. With Israel, state-wise. But they didn't tell us anything they were going to do. So if anybody doesn't like anything they do, we didn't know shit about
right,
it.
It was them. All of them, yeah. So I take one fucking week off, and there's war in the Middle East, just like I have been saying this whole time.
Don't worry. I emailed that Washington Post guy, sent a bribe and a threat. We're going to score big on Polymarket.
Oh, awesome.
Be cool.
Good. At least somebody outside of Trump's immediate orbit profited off of this. Anyway, since war broke out at the end of last month, the question on everybody's lips has been, but why, though? Iran presented no immediate threat to America, and they haven't for the last my entire lifetime. We were in the middle of renegotiating a treaty that we already got him to sign once before Trump tore it up the first term, and they were surprisingly cool about it when we bombed the shit out of their country last year, but Trump decided to bomb them anyway because he likes killing brown people with fire, so that's what we did.
Yeah, well, that tracks with the official stance from our Director of National Intelligence during a Senate hearing, John Ossoff.
Johnny O?
He asked Tulsi Gabbard, our DNI, if Iran's nuclear program is an imminent threat. And she said, Donald Trump is the only person who can determine that. Ossoff said, false, because that's false. But she also added, it is not the intelligence community's responsibility to determine what is and is not an imminent threat.
Is it?
And Ossoff said,
it really is.
It is precisely your responsibility.
Job description, man.
Are you not doing that? But it's like when someone tells you that they've never changed the filter on their fridge water thing. I really need you to do that.
Yeah, it's like that important for national security.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Ossoff apparently doesn't know how it works, and Trump's gut, which is all that matters, was saying imminent and like filet-o-fish. So
yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Here we are.
I just want to point out that if you asked Puzzle in a Thunderstorm how much money we had, and one of us answered, Eli is the only one who can determine that, the government would rightly shut us down.
Yeah, right, right. So, of course, now every chance a real reporter has to ask Trump a question at this point, they ask what the goal of the fucking war he just launched is. And to keep things spicy, he makes sure he gives a different answer every time, right? Because the bit would be no fun if he'd always used the same word of the day. So when we started bombing their children on February 28th, he had this pre-taped message because everybody knew there's no fucking way he was going to make it all the way through a declaration of war without talking about sharks and batteries or some shit. And in that, he said the whole point was to topple the Iranian government. But then that didn't happen, so it became being about weakening their military and their influence, which I sure, but that's like saying the point of the bombing was to make bum holes.
What is purpose, really? Yes. What is? What is? You're all a bunch of dualists.
So a few days after the war started, of course, Marco Rubio accidentally admitted that we actually launched a world economy destroying war because Israel was going to do it first and we didn't want to look like a bunch of sissies. Now, since then, he's tried to walk those comments back, but it's really hard to do in shoes that don't fit. More on that later.
No, I said the Jews started all the wars. It's just a fun fact. Stephen Miller told it to me, and I was like, yeah, oh, that's right. Great. I didn't know that was the truth.
So the day after that, the goal, according to Trump, was to destroy security infrastructure. So we were back to tautological justifications. But then 2 days later, he went all fucking Carthago Delenda Est and called for their unconditional surrender. Now, I guarantee you that happened because he heard the term unconditional surrender for the first time in a briefing earlier that day. And he went, ooh, that one. That's the kind of surrender yeah. I want. That sounds great.
I've been working up my negotiation points. That actually makes it way easier if we just do what did you say? That's great. Great. Lunch?
Unconditional excursion. Surrender. Okay, yeah. So as his war entered its second week and gas prices started to skyrocket back home, he assured everybody that the war was, quote, very complete, pretty much, end quote, which is a statement already at war with itself before he adds that the war is simultaneously, quote, only just the beginning, end quote. Now, when he was asked about those contradictions, he said, quote, well, I think you could say both, end quote, which to his credit, you can say, but he did. He proved that.
It's an excursion entanglement. I was being ironic. I'm enjoying Trump's descent into insane Buddhism. What is he doing?
Yeah, yep. Right. No, right.
The end, he's just lightly hovering off the floor. There is no
is
Iran.
By March 13th, though, so we're now 2 weeks into the war, there was a new metric for success. During an interview on Fox News on the 13th, Trump said that the war would end, quote, when I feel it in my bones, end quote.
Huh.
Yeah. Now, to be honest, look, that is a measure I would be willing to accept if members of Congress got to feel his bones, right? It's all about separation of powers.
Okay, how about this? We tell him that he's going to have to go to the war, then his bone spurs will start acting
up.
They do tend to do that when it's time for him to go to war.
His bones then, yeah. Now, of course, his supporters have labeled his wheel o' war aims strategic ambiguity.
Head on a swivel.
Oh, it's just mixed strategy, like in poker. He's now
right, yeah.
Game theory optimal.
But most of them are towing the line. Republicans, though, however, behind closed doors are clearly terrified of the effects that another unwinnable Middle Eastern war coupled with sky-high gas prices is going to have on the midterms. Not so much the hundreds of Iranians murdered for nothing but Trump's bloodlust. That's not bothering him. But the votes thing is. And they're clearly pushing him to declare victory and start winding this shit down, which is why, at the same time he's deploying thousands more Marines to the theater, he tweeted out some bullshit on Friday about how, quote, we are getting very close to meeting our objectives as we consider winding down our great military efforts in the Middle East, end quote.
Okay, that being said, Trump spoke with a former president who he is friendly with, and that former president is totally jealous that Trump's doing a war with Iran.
Hell yeah.
So Trump might want to milk it a little bit more because he's enjoying that jealousy. And the press conference about that was truly insane. A reporter asked, hey, so you said it's a former president that you're friendly with. Is it George W. Bush? Trump said no. And then the reporter said, is it Bill Clinton? But Trump sniffed out the trap there.
Yes, yeah, two questions in. Yes.
I don't want to say.
The best. Oh, man, Donald, I wish I could distract everyone from my name being in the Epstein
files. Right.
You're doing a great job, man. Also, can I crash, dude? Hill Dog's so mad right now, bro. It's crazy. She's just like, blah, 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 kids, blah, blah, blah.
I don't want the couch that JD had access to.
Not that one. Oh, I know what he's like, that dirty dog.
So, according to the latest missive, as of this recording, who the fuck knows if he's changed it again since then, the new war aim has always been, quote, never allowing Iran to even get close to nuclear capability and always being in a position where the USA can quickly and powerfully react to such a situation, end quote. So... What? Yeah, so continue to exist in three-dimensional space, right? Like that war aim is have a military generally. That's
okay.
It.
Hear me out. We're going to put a nuke in Iran. And then, if they look like they're getting blueprint Iran, we push the button that only we have. It's our button. It's
they'll
a
probably
special
walk
button.
Right over because the plunger won't work. And they'll
right.
Go
yes.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it'll right in the
we
face.
Start the process again.
So now you might be thinking, what about the Strait of Hormuz, the vital waterway that Iran choked off at the start of the war that's slowly strangling the global economy? Well, that is somebody else's shit. Quote, the Hormuz Strait will have to be guarded and policed as necessary by other nations who use it. The United States does not. End
we
quote.
Don't use that. I'm nope. Not even. I don't know the Hormuz.
And
it's the chickpea stuff, right?
As to that call for unconditional surrender, well, Trump has admitted now that Iran is never going to admit to you that they unconditionally surrendered, which makes it sound conditional, but hey, what do I know?
Sure
but according to an actual official statement by the fucking White House, Trump will determine for himself when they've, quote, effectively surrendered, end quote.
The new Ayatollah was wearing sweatpants in the afternoon today and eating Kraft Parmesan straight from the canister, so
yes.
Mission accomplished.
I also learned from that joke that Heath has been surrendered since third grade, yeah. Whatever that means to him. I just
and look,
I don't have pants on right now.
As dumb as it is to pretend that this is what we were going for, I'll play along if it ends the bombings, right? People are dying by the thousands now. And from everything that I've seen, even if we could somehow patch this shit up today, the economy is still going to be recovering from this shit until at least 2027. And if it goes on for even a couple more weeks, we're into the 2030s. And if we're waiting for Trump to reach a point where he doesn't feel in his bones like a loser, this shit's going to go on a hell of a lot longer than a couple more weeks. And as the inevitability of our species-wide demise comes into clearer focus, we're going to pause for a quick word from our first sponsor this week, Quince.
So it's Yanther?
No, it's like Janther.
I don't know if that's how you say wise or if I'm saying something wrong.
Jace.
What?
Sarah? Melania? What are you guys doing in my living room?
Tyler, there's my favorite White House intern, finally. We wanted some clothing advice.
In my house?
Ja-ja, you always look a little spiffy.
Yeah, we want to look like the common, everyday folk, and we're worried that our outfit choices don't always match that.
Yeah, the other day you yelled for cubitus and your whole body covered in metal.
Metal, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, if you guys want to up your wardrobe in a way that's affordable, you should try Quince.
Quats. Quince?
Quince has the everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. Lightweight cashmere sweaters, short-sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees and 100% Pima cotton and European jersey linen. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work season to season.
That sounds great, Tyler.
It is. Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middleman. You're not paying for the brand markups or fancy retail stores, just quality clothing.
So no Janther coats?
I'm pretty sure not. Right now, I'm loving their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're warm and cozy but stylish without the giant price tag. That's why I, Tyler, personally endorse Quince.
It's a jackrabbit and a panda.
Those are not the animals I expected you to say.
Right now, go to quince.com/skeptograph for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/skeptograph for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptograph.
All right, Tyler. Thanks.
So wait, is the animal a mix of a jackrabbit and a panda, or just the fur?
Chase.
Got it.
Nice.
And we're back. Next up in headlines in shallow maybe next year news.
Oh.
Hollywood
Timothy
star.
Chalamet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hollywood star-studded night of cinematic celebration.
Opera is not that cool. It's just not. It's fine.
Why would you join him? Don't join him. They're all mad at him. They're all mad at him. He said a true thing out loud, and we're all supposed to be like, "Whoa,
oh, I actually quite love opera. The fact that I've actually never been to an opera or ballet is just a coincidence."
Opera and ballet can have amazing artists, but also nobody really
cares. Why are you joining him? No one's on ours. We are joining the losing side of this war. You want to sign up for the Iranian army while we're here?
Oh, they're winning that one. Man,
yeah, well, you know, not when it comes to kids.
Okay, fair.
Hey, what's going on in Hollywood, Eli?
Thank you. Hollywood star-studded night of cinematic celebration took place this week, and when you're on your 550th Christian movie professionally, it's nice to hear about a good movie every now and then. So let's talk about the winners, the losers, and whether anybody yelled a racial slur. So obviously, the big winner of the night was the musical. I'm talking, of course, about Sinners, which received 16 nominations and took home the win for Best Screenplay, Cinematography, Best Actor, and Best Score, because, of course, it did.
Yeah, Sinners was awesome. I felt like they should have won for Best Original Song, too.
Yeah.
I Lied to You. It was amazing. Considering it was also, you know, one of the best movie scenes of all time.
Yeah.
That took an amazing piece of blues with incredibly talented instrumentalists, fused it seamlessly with centuries of music forms that came before it and then later grew out of it. But, you know, K-pop Demon Hunters also had a song. It was fun. And all the digital vocal tuning and pitch correction made that song sound really good. It did. It was a fun, poppy song.
Oh, Heath, you missed it. The announcement this year is they actually tallied the votes for that by how many times your kid made you listen to it on YouTube.
Oh.
So get ready for Baby Shark to sweep it next year.
Obviously. Got no, it. It's like I showed the live performance of Golden from the Oscars to my 3-year-old niece, and she had to reconstruct her entire worldview upon realizing that real world Rumi doesn't have purple hair. Like, she's going to need, she's traumatized by that shit.
That's her trauma. She'll be talking about it in 10 years.
Uh-huh.
But that's not all. Every beret-wearing film major's favorite director, Paul Thomas Anderson, and his film, One Battle After Another, took home quite a few awards as well, including Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Editing, and the very first win for the Academy's brand new casting category, meaning that only women have won that Oscar. Not a single man in the history of the Academy has won that award. Bigots.
Yeah, right? I feel it's weird to call Sinners the big winner when it won the second most Oscars. But hey, kudos to the Academy. One fewer win for both of those movies, and Sinners wins exactly 3/5 as many, and that's fucking awkward.
Yeah,
right?
No, I'm glad they put that into the tally system.
Yeah.
One other exciting event for the evening was the latest in only 7 ties in Oscar history. The Singers and Two People Exchanging Saliva both won for Best Live Action Short. Nobody cares. Though, I feel like if they meant it, they would have given each group half a statue instead of a whole
Right,
one
and when you
each,
form them together. Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay, when this happened, it was kind of funny. Kumail Nanjiani, who's awesome, he was presenting that one. And he had to be like, no, okay, fuck. This is real, though. Seriously, it's both. This isn't a La La Land Moonlight thing. It's actually a tie.
I'm reading it correctly from the card. I checked.
Right. I'm looking
at
the card.
And then I checked backstage.
And also, a quick note to the cynical I'm too cool to give a shit response I got on Facebook when I posted about the Oscars, about how they're just millionaires giving each other awards. I want to point out that people making live action short films and documentaries are, by and large, not millionaires. And if it wasn't for shit like the Oscars, foreign film and art house film and short films and documentary films would have a lot harder time finding their audience. Right. So the fact that we're able to preserve all of that at the cost of a few millionaires giving each other awards, that seems like a bargain if you ask me. That's my take.
Yeah. Sorry, no, I couldn't hear you. I was just reading in the history book about all the times when coming after the arts turned out to be an awesome idea. So, let me just finish this chapter. I'm sure I'm going to find a point where we were like, yeah, fuck them. they'll kill someone eventually. Let's see. We'll get it. All right. Either way, the more uncontroversial Oscar nights among the recent ones that I've been alive for, I thought Conan O'Brien was... fine.
Yeah, no, I laughed at his jokes almost three times.
So. Look, here's the thing. The people who like him, mysterious enigmas as they are to me, seemed to have enjoyed him the amount they do.
All
so
right.
I'll call it a win.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
Him and Steve Martin, God bless ye, Mary Jo. And
Steve
opera.
Martin's the shit now.
I want
Back
them and up. I wish nothing but well for them and theirs. I want them to be happy and flourishing.
Yep. That's the official stance that we landed on.
At the opera, if they want.
Best of luck with the opera and the ballet. Great
and
stuff.
And Steve Martin.
And in Cry Havoc and Let Slip the Doge of War news.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Hey, you remember Doge? Yeah, they were going to save us like $3 trillion on the federal budget.
The number.
But then $1 trillion. Okay, and then, and they're gone. They're gone now. But... the government is now very efficiently spending billions of dollars to get rid of Ayatollah Khamenei and replace him with Ayatollah Khamenei. But but don't worry. No one's younger and much more angry. Mm-hmm. Well, we heard about plenty of Doge's failures last year as they were happening, especially considering the whole thing was carried out by idiots like Elon Musk and some guy named Big Balls, who, reminder, got beat up by some kids in Washington, D.C. when his girlfriend, Sarah Huckabee, wasn't there to protect him.
She was taking those kids to town.
Some is lore, some is real.
It's impossible to tell.
Yes.
To say.
A lot of answers out there.
Quantum state.
I don't know if you've seen where we are on that reliability chart they accidentally put us on one time, but we earned our position.
Well, here's the latest. We learned about more failures in the form of leaked deposition videos that are just truly indistinguishable from scripted episodes of Veep, the
You're
political
right.
satire
They
show.
Genuinely are, yeah.
Truly. Like, the Veep writers must be jealous of reality. They must be.
Yeah.
And they did a great job. So, turns out Doge was even dumber than we thought, if that's possible. Their team of idiots was trying to root out DEI while literally not knowing what that even means.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about the fact that reality has necessitated our transfer to fucking pop-up video? Right? Not because we're lazy, but because the audience deserves the best and what they said is so much funnier than what we could say
right.
about what they said.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of people seem to think that DEI is there for like fairness or, you know, to make up for historical wrongs, but no. As Doge has perfectly demonstrated, unless you make a conscious effort to overcome your own culturally bred biases, you end up hiring a bunch of know-nothing, underqualified, dipshit 19-year-olds because they remind you of yourself at that age or whatever idiotic shit Elon Musk was using to choose these idiots. Doge really could have benefited, in fact, from some fucking DEI, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So the depositions are part of a lawsuit about improper cancellation of funding filed against Doge by the American Historical Association, the Modern Language Association, yes, the MLA, who've been correctly demanding an Oxford comma since the 90s.
They're not going to fuck you, Heath.
Okay, might. But the fucking serial comma guys aren't going to fuck him, JFK, or the strippers.
That's right.
The lawsuit also includes the Authors Guild and the American Council of Learned Societies. And, you know, not a good sign when groups that are learned are the other team.
Yeah.
So here's what we learned.
Learned.
I'll start with the insidious DEI involved in HVAC repair.
Huh.
Apparently, we were fixing HVAC systems in museums too wokely.
Sure.
And Doge was using ChatGPT, presumably the free version, to root out all the feminist ductwork, which is a problem. According to a spreadsheet from the plaintiffs, the artful Dozers were using prompts like, exact words, does the following relate at all to DEI? Respond factually in less than 120 characters. Begin with yes or no.
They wanted it tweet sized, huh? Yeah.
I don't want to read a whole bunch of fucking detail here.
Ah, so stupid. That's why a museum got flagged for DEI when it requested repairs to an old HVAC system to create a better preservation environment for the varied collections it houses. Apparently, the word varied made it really
oh my
tricky
God.
In there because it's kind of close to diverse, I think, is maybe what partially happened. When asked if that HVAC repair was DEI, ChatGPT responded, yes, because they had to start with yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, improving HVAC systems enhances preservation conditions for collections, aligning with the goal of providing greater access to diverse audiences.
Black
hashtag
people will
D-E-I.
Also go.
Yep.
Oh my God, it added the hashtag. Because they asked for it in a tweet.
It might have been Octothorpe DEI, yeah. Either way. Yep. They flagged
and you know
it.
What happened? You know what happened? Scoops pushed back from his computer chair to where Big Balls was sitting on a yoga ball doing sit-ups, and he said, we got him.
Yeah, right. Right. Like, our only real glimmer of hope is the knowledge that all these idiots are uploading their medical records to Grok for a second opinion, right?
It's true, they are.
I like to imagine, and this must be true, that they did that thing with the yoga ball, and a few of them thought it was a chair at the time and just flew backwards.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So tell the press that I got mugged by a bunch of gang members. Yeah. I'm going to go crawl out to my car.
We also learned about a Doge staffer named Justin Fox, who was assigned the task of finding and canceling any federal grants to the National Endowment for the Humanities that contained, you know, DEI stuff, generally. One of the many projects he flagged for defunding was a documentary about Jewish women who were forced into slave labor during the Holocaust. When asked about why the fuck you would do that, Fox responded, these are exact words, it's a Jewish, specifically focused on Jewish culture and amplifying the marginalized voices of the females in that culture. It's inherently related to DEI for that reason.
I feel like they only asked us so they'd know whether to file it under anti-Semitism or sexism. Yeah.
So that response, just truly insane. And it led to the obvious follow-up. Hey, Justin, what's DEI? And that gave us the following actual exchange in a deposition. So, counsel for the plaintiffs said, how do you interpret DEI? Justin Fox starts with an exasperated sigh and then literally...
He's so over it.
Literally 10 seconds of Christian silence.
Jesus.
And then he said, there was an executive order that explicitly laid out the details. Counsel, I'm asking for your understanding of it. Fox, yeah, my understanding is... exactly what was written in the EO. And then the counsel starts to jump and he's like, do you? And Fox is like, I do not remember exactly what was in the EO.
But it's still your understanding.
Well, I copied and pasted it into the prompt, okay? And then asked for a tweet about it. What more do you want?
Okay. It's not done. From there, the exchange continued in just... a crazy, like an Orwellian Meisner exercise. It actually kept going like this. Eli, do you mind? Do you think you could channel your inner Doge bro? And
absolutely, I can.
Justin,
I don't have
Fox
a fedora
voice
in here, but I can try.
Okay, just imagine if saying Gaul was a guy. That should happen.
Thank you. Thank you for the guidance.
Okay. So I'll be the counsel for the plaintiffs. So Justin, right now, do you have an understanding of what DEI is?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's your understanding as you sit here today in this deposition?
Well, it was exactly what was written in the EO.
Okay. Do you have an understanding as you sit here today of what DEI means?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your understanding of what it means?
Well, It is exactly what was written in the EO.
Okay. But I'm not asking what was in the EO. I'm asking very specifically, focus up, about your present understanding of DEI. Do you have a present understanding of DEI?
Yeah.
Great. Can you explain what that understanding is?
Well, it's just easier for me to be referencing back to the EO.
Are you refusing to answer the question?
I'm not refusing to answer the question.
I'm just too stupid to actually answer the question.
It's somehow better than what is a photocopier.
Truly? Those were the exact words. That was a real legal lawsuit thing.
Yeah. Sans focus up.
Yep.
And also, just for the record, for terrifying context, Justin Fox got paid $150,000 for his work at the Department of Governmental Efficiency.
Sounds efficient.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the latest development in that lawsuit. The legal team for DOGE got super mad about those deposition videos getting out because the videos showed what was true and that fucks up their whole thing. Mm-hmm. So they somehow convinced a federal judge to issue an order removing all the videos from the internet. Well, that's nothing. But it's also incredibly stupid. So a group of nonprofits appeared in court last week to explain that to the judge, who seemed to at least vaguely understand the concept after some help. So it looks like the entire internet might get unerased. That's good.
Nice.
And my favorite detail, the deposition videos originally went viral after being uploaded by 404 Media Group, named after the 404 error that pops up on a browser when the page you're looking for can't be found.
How long do you think the Doge Bros were fooled by that alone? I bet it was a couple of days, right? A couple of days, they were like, where is it? And they were like, it's on 404. And they were like, okay, good. Solved. Nice. Excellent. Anyways, as I was saying, if you do planks rather than sit-ups.
Isometrics, yeah, I've heard.
It's about stretching the muscles.
Okay. While we're on the general topic of responsible government expenditures,
I have some money?
Just a quick reminder that Republicans aren't happy with the $1 trillion in the Pentagon budget. So they're asking for another $200 billion to finance the Iran war. And since money is made of money, here's a few other things we could do with $200 billion of money instead of a war. We could restore the ACA subsidy for about 22 million Americans, many of whom saw their premiums triple this year and can't afford healthcare anymore. We could restore that subsidy, by the way, for 6 years with that money. We could also eliminate all medical debt in the entire country. Gone.
Jesus.
Or, just brainstorming, we could fix the HVAC for like 571,000 museums, assuming they're willing to, you know, finally present exhibits about the white men of American history for the very first time. So yeah. It's just, there's lots of great options.
But we don't even need great options, right? Like, I think we can all agree that if we just sent everybody in America enough postage to send one fucking postcard, it would have been better than spending that money to blow up the world economy.
That's fair. Postcards. So many good ideas.
Use man to say on the racial slur. Oh, fuck it.
We're going to keep brainstorming some great ideas for $200 billion. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Mint Mobile.
Check the couch cushions.
For eating?
No, Sarah, never for eating.
I mean, not never. Free country.
Mr. President, you wanted to see me?
Tyler, big guy, fantastic. Looking for a little extra cash. You got any?
I have $11 and a note from my friends and family.
Note about what?
It's not important.
You're right, big man, it's not. Plus, we need way more than that.
Well, Mr. President, if you're looking for a way to watch your spending, maybe you should try Mint Mobile.
What's Mint Mobile?
Sentient army of mint plants utilized by Rathbar the Glorbian. Surprisingly effective, actually.
Nope, not that. If you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and free perks that cost you more in the long run, then a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month might be right for you.
$15 a month. That's amazing.
It sure is. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Hold on. Can I keep my Patriot mobile phone? I like how sometimes websites are in Chinese for a second before they switch back to the English version.
Me too.
You sure can. With Mint Mobile, you can bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle.
But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I love that I get the same service I used to get with Big Wireless for a fraction of the price. That's why I, Tall Tyler, personally endorse Mint Mobile.
Feels weird to hear him call himself Tall Tyler.
Yeah, right? It reminds me of that Big Balls guy. Do you remember him?
That is my pilgrim soul, sir.
Okay, Jesus.
Wow.
Where do we sign up?
If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. That's mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months. 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
You were at the wedding.
I don't remember where I am ever.
It's true. He doesn't. And we're back, next up in headlines, and what's the matter with Meta news tonight? One of the things that often gets overlooked about the dot-com boom and the billionaires it created is that the spoils in this war didn't go to the people who were the brightest or the most innovative or the most daring. By and large, they went to the people that sucked the most. What set Bill Gates apart from the many other people that could create basic programming languages when he was getting his start was his willingness to charge for something that other people were giving away for free. And of course, most companies would rather pay for something, you know, from a fellow capitalist that they could then own rather than use a free version from some hippie they couldn't control. Likewise, Facebook succeeded not because it was better than MySpace, but because Mark Zuckerberg was a bigger piece of shit than Tom.
And just a reminder, by the time Facebook was a serious competitor, MySpace was owned by News Corp. So Tom was actually Rupert Murdoch. Zuckerberg was a bigger piece of shit than Rupert Murdoch. So, I mean, like, good work easily beating MySpace, despite all that amazing pimping you could do on your space, and making the Murdochs lose, I think, like $550 million on their bet buying MySpace. But yeah, Zuck's been steadily ramping the piece of shititude ever since.
Yeah, to be fair, if we built our entire society around the myth that lottery winners were just way better number pickers than everyone else, right? That they had some deep insight into numbers and numberism that most people didn't have, they'd be psychopaths filled with their own son's blood too. You know,
Stock market is awesome.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And of course, if you want evidence of what a business genius Mark Zuckerberg isn't, you could look at literally any decision he ever made that was harder than be more of a dick than Tom Anderson. From Facebook's bumbling IPO to his hilariously misguided vanity run for the White House that was so obviously doomed that he pretends it never happened. His mediocrity is on perpetual display, but nowhere is it more obvious than the financial black hole he's created around his dreams for the metaverse.
Hey, guys, nerds, bring it in. If you read Ready Player One and you think that the guy who hides his vast personal wealth inside a secret maze of his favorite childhood media is the good guy, you haven't even read the end of Ready Player One.
Yeah, so, okay, so full disclosure here. You would be hard-pressed to find a bigger VR nerd than me. I fucking love my Quest. I play it every day. I will absolutely get the Steam Frame as soon as I can. I own an operational fucking Virtual Boy.
Please, no illusions. Our listeners can only get so wet.
But some people are into that. But even I cannot help but laugh at the idiotic vision Mark deluded himself into believing about how we were all going to get addicted to being androgynous, legless wraiths in a VR game lobby with Nintendo Wii graphics. He was so convinced of the inevitable future that represented that he renamed his whole stupid company Meta while his VR department was still operating at a net profit of negative $10 billion a year. But don't worry, though. They were able to lose much more later.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If you can't make money on androgynous, legless wraiths, you have no creativity and you don't deserve to be a CEO. That's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, so after posting 11-figure losses for the last 5 years, including a staggering estimated $24 billion in losses in 2025 alone, Mark is starting to think that maybe this metaverse thing isn't going to take off, y'all. And perhaps that's because 4% of all regular Quest users worldwide are me. Or maybe it's because despite the billions in investment, Facebook's flagship VR application couldn't manage a single experience more fun than a $20 Spider-Man-like sandbox game that let me attach bad guys to the cars as they drove by with my webs. And perhaps it's because the board of his company is threatening to oust him from the Earth's atmosphere if he doesn't admit that this was really fucking stupid. But whatever the reason, Mark is suddenly running from VR and he's burning the metaverse to the ground behind him as he goes.
Which world do you think he's sadder about destroying for his personal gain? His or ours?
Right, yeah. Good question. Now, there are plenty of casualties of this pivot, most notably the thousands of people whose jobs have been lost to Zuckerberg's hubris. But the one that I most want to focus on right now is the VR workout app that I've been using since February that they stopped fucking updating because you know what? Fuck you. And fuck you, Supernatural. It turns out that FitXR was better the whole time. Plus, April Poff is on there, and she's a goddamn legend on FitXR.
Okay, now I'm picturing April Poff doing one-armed pull-ups in a VR headset.
That's, you're picturing it correctly. By the way, happy birthday, April.
Happy birthday when we record this. Wait, not
when
now.
She
now
hears it, she's going to hear it on the Patreon version.
She's got
version.
Love
she'll
and hate on tattooed on her knuckles.
So, okay, but the casualty that's getting the most press at the moment is a VR experience called Horizon Worlds, which was the metaverse, right? It was the whole fucking thing. This is the thing that he guaranteed investors was the future when he was pissing away $80 billion collective dollars of their money. It was a shared space where users could create and share VR experiences. And in reality, it was 24 million empty rooms that looked kind of cool and a couple dozen full of 11-year-old boys screaming slurs. But despite it being the centerpiece of the entire company's vision, Meta announced it would be shutting down the VR version of the app in June. It would continue as a mobile experience, though, where it's much cheaper for nobody to use.
Okay, and if you can't make money on a couple dozen rooms of 11-year-old boys yelling slurs, you're in a crazy premise, and you need to re-examine your life if that can be the beginning of a sentence about you.
No yeah, good. Or at least start cutting off some legs, exactly.
Right, yeah. So, now, for whatever it's worth, the outcry from people who were suckered into buying $500 headsets just for this stupid vision of the future of social media forced them to back off, at least somewhat. So now they say that they'll at least keep the existing shit on there in VR, though they won't be adding anything new. So, like, they're still going to kill it, but by starvation rather than firing squad. But if you're invested in Facebook's stock, or I'm sorry, Meta's stock until he unrenames it, I guess, don't worry, because under the exact same leadership that just wasted $80 billion on an ill-informed hunch that anybody with a basic understanding of video game history or the history of technology could have told them was stupid right from the get-go, the company will be pivoting once again to the definitely right this time future of AI, on which the company is projected to spend nearly $100 billion in 2026.
Cool.
That'll go great.
AI will come up with something to do with those legless androgynous things.
Sure, yeah.
That's useful.
And in badump Trump news, Donald Trump's presidency is unprecedented in a lot of terrible ways. One could argue that his open criminality, self-servicing policies, and outright degradation of the office will only be solved by defanging the office entirely when we finally manage to pry his corpse out of it. But it's not all bad, because sometimes he says some mind-shatteringly funny shit, as was the case this week when he made a Pearl Harbor joke to the Prime Minister of Japan.
I'm saying you're good at attacking. It's a compliment. You did so good on that. And seriously, that's what he was going for.
Uh-huh.
And it was accidentally fucking hilarious. It was like super accidentally funny.
Look, most of us were just relieved he didn't go with a Hiroshima joke, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you could feel it, too. You could feel the potential. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get out front of this and say I know there are some people out there who will say that because of how evil Donald Trump is, there's nothing funny about him. And those people are, unfortunately, wrong and also the worst. I mean, you're not as bad as Trump, but you're the worst R side gets. Like you're exhausting, and nobody in your life genuinely likes you.
Okay.
They people actively do not invite your partner to places for fear that that you will be there.
All right,
they've
Tom.
Made the choice to sacrifice your partner's friendship on the off chance they have to see you again. And your partner knows it. And they don't tell you because they don't like you either. Anyways, here's what happened. Here's what happened was he was responding to a question from a reporter about why Japan and the other allies had received no advance notice of the U.S.-Israeli assault on Iran. And look, I know we try not to play clips on this show, but I need you to hear the beautiful whiff that takes place here in real time. Really listen, because this is poetry. Listen to this.
Well, one thing you don't want to signal too much, you know, when we go in, we went in very hard and we didn't tell anybody about it because we wanted surprise. Who knows better about surprise than Japan?
It's a little laugh.
Hey, why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor? Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yes. Very much giant whiff, if you go by the reaction of Prime Minister Takaishi, and at a meeting with another world leader, an ally in the Oval Office. That's a pretty good metric.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Her eyes get super wide and she stares directly at whoever talked her into actually going to this meeting with Trump. And just using her eyes, she very clearly says, "This is a giant fight leader. You're fucking stupid. What did I say?" But without making any of the noises to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Very reasonable reaction. But there's another timeline where she starts weeping with laughter, and we're only like a few quantum leaps away from that timeline.
So few quantum leaps away.
Okay, but here's the thing. In the infinite folds of the multiverse, Heath, there's a timeline where she unleashes a second surprise attack on Pearl Harbor at that exact moment, and she
yes!
goes, "Funny you should bring that up."
Assassin's Creed Blade. Splat! Right? Amazing. Anyways, look, I know the world is in the state that it is, and so it's not exactly top news that people should care about. But hey, at least we can say there was one Trump bomb this week where he was the only one who died.
And finally tonight, in Shoe d'Etat news, we have a very important revelation about the footwear situation in the Trump administration.
So crazy.
And of course, that tells us about the penile situation as well. Uh-huh. Or at least it tells us about the tragic scramble among men, especially those who might work for Donald Trump, to have the perception of larger genitalia, which of course is crucial during the day-to-day operation of the federal government. In that scramble, we saw cabinet members very clearly wearing absurdly oversized shoes, because shoe size, not actual foot size, determines penis. No, it doesn't. None of that. Also, stop running the country using your peens if that's what's happening, because it really seems like that's what's happening.
Well, how better to fuck us over, Heath?
Honestly, yeah. If we got a New York Times expose on how the administration have invested $1 billion into seeing if our hands are bigger than our faces to check if we're gay, I will be 0% surprised.
Okay, so how the fuck is this an actual thing in our timeline? Well, it starts with Donald Trump getting angry about the woefully unsophisticated shoe game of his cabinet.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's been gifting his people his favorite shoes. And in order to do that, he's been asking their shoe size. That includes a meeting with J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, and one other unnamed official, during which Trump said, "You could tell a lot about a man by his shoe size." So they all gave their sizes and clearly lied about it. According to Vance, he said 13, lying. Rubio
said,
Rubio said 11 and a half because, you know, all of a sudden panicked about the enormous penis of J.D. Vance right next to him, also lying, and 7 for the secret unnamed little guy. So Trump got him all his favorite brand of proper shoes for a statesman from Florsheim at the mall near Wetzel's Pretzels and the Thomas Kincaid Art Gallery.
Yeah, it's fucking the Filet-O-Fish of shoes right there. Yeah.
Truly the Filet-O-Fish of mall shoes. It's so sad. Oh my God, they have to wear buckets on their feet to work because they didn't want Trump to think their dicks were small. I would not write it as a joke, and they're doing it.
This is what's actually happening. I'm certain of it. So. So what happens?
Like a dog.
First what time? Happens when your sociopathic boss buys you a pair of Florsheim shoes?
Marl shoes.
That don't even remotely fit because you did a penis-based lie. Well, you wear those fucking shoes because you're a coward. Just swimming in your lies. And then somebody takes a photograph because you're a top-level government official and you're wearing insane clown shoes in the White House. And just for the record, they cost $145.
Ooh, big spender, Mr. President.
The ones that Trump got, yeah. So these idiots never even considered, you know, buying a pair that fits after they did their lie. And I put some of those photos in the notes just so you don't think I'm exaggerating. They're truly insane. Vance looks like a marionette. Like a chicken man marionette with those shoes on. And for Rubio, it's even worse possibly. There's a good 2-inch gap between the heel of his foot and the heel of the shoe. You can see it.
It's pretty intense. Nuts. The motherfucker put him in literal clown shoes as if he wanted to reward us for all our hard work.
Think of the blisters. They're living in a Dante's Inferno punishment, right? On a writer's room floor somewhere.
Yeah. Rubio actually wore these things to Davos. He was walking around Davos with these insane
clomping
shoes.
Please use the proper term.
Also worth noting, Pete Hegseth is one of the lucky Florsheim recipients, but his feet are conveniently outside of the frame of the photo. And if he's the unnamed size 7, keeping that a secret would be a very serious matter of national security.
Of course. Yeah.
And if I'm fucking Johnny Florsheim, I definitely can't afford to get blacklisted by the Pentagon as a terrorist supply chain risk like Anthropic. So I'm definitely not exposing the details of Pete Hegseth's tiny little baby feet. And speaking of insane preoccupations with penis size within the Republican Party, we have another controversy about that topic. They had two of those in the same week. Fox News host Mark Levin may or may not have a micropenis. According to Megyn Kelly, he does. She hasn't seen it, but he just does. Levin and Kelly were in a feud about whatever the fuck conservatives argue about, and Megyn Kelly said, "He tweets about me obsessively in the crudest, nastiest terms possible, literally more than some stalkers I've had arrested. He doesn't like it when women like me fight back because of his micropenis."
Is that it? Okay, so I want to be clear here that the universally recognized heuristic for penis size through all the known breadth of human history has been hand size, right? Not shoe size, not how often you fucking tweet about Megyn Kelly, fucking hand size. And it's really telling that all the MAGA right is so desperately running away from that, right?
Yeah, does anybody have tiny little baby hands? That's weird.
I don't know.
So as much as I do not enjoy Megyn Kelly's journalistic work, I say in quotes, or her work as a human being, generally, and as much as the whole penis thing is fucking dumb, I'm all the way Team Megyn on this very moment specifically. This piece of shit from Fox News makes a bunch of lewd comments, and Megyn knows how stupid people are, especially in their conservative media sphere. And she's like, "Micro penis, I win. That's your SEO forever, Mark. Enjoy. I have won." And I think she has. And MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, enters the picture here, too. She followed up by posting, "I wholeheartedly support Megyn Kelly telling the world that Mark Levin has a micropenis." So, yeah, that's what Republicans were working on last week. Nothing else important to do. That's
clearly.
What
I don't know who coined the everybody's just 12 now theory of American politics, but thanks for helping it all click into place with that.
Yeah. What I love most about this is that Megyn Kelly, who, to be clear, is an actual journalist who's just pretending to be evil and stupid as her brand, has realized.
Yeah, she's just very cynical.
Yeah, no, she was like a left wing journalist, did real journalism. For a second after Trump was like bled out of her nose or whatever, she was like, "Does the left want me?" And we were like, "Ha, no, you got to stay pocket committed." But like,
She now realized she just has to stoop for her livelihood to the fucking circle game, and that's her life now.
Yep.
And just one final thought on this. If anyone gets the opportunity to have some naked time with a person experiencing micropenishood, you are in for a good time. A
lot of tongue stuff.
I would imagine. I'm told by a very reliable source who has firsthand experience, this is very likely a sexual partner with lots to offer. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, it just sucks for the micropenists that are always getting lumped in with assholes like this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to No Illusions. Thanks to Eli Bosnick.
You're welcome.
And thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep
doing
that.
Tell
please
them
keep listening.
Welcome.
And I please don't. Keep starting your friends. Eli, would you like to say you're welcome?
You're welcome.
And if you find the
doesn't
knives
hit
to play,
right when you have to ask for it, though.
Yeah,
it felt like an apology
for bullying.
Felt fake. If you enjoy the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like Joe T, Kate Bartlett, Blue Cheese is Moldy Cheese. That's true, I guess.
Fuck
Irregular History Buff, Kathew, HDQF12.
Yogurt's moldy milk.
Yeah. You're thinking of cottage cheese.
Same. It's the same. They don't understand
also,
what food is.
James Burton, Christopher RBC, Sean B, Lost in the Woods System, Dan Eggman, Emily, Mike X, Jason Mobley, Bonker Conker, Unionize Everywhere. Yes.
Woo woo.
David Martin, Lauren, Richard H. Bus, yas, bass, jazz, something like that. Dallin Durfee, Victoria, Talon, and Rob Parker. We love you, and we'd never show it with Florsheim shoes. Eli would probably get you Crocs, and those are very comfortable.
I would, sure.
And they are, you got a Yankee Candle? We might get you one of those, right?
Those are nice. They have wick locks now. Fuck those assholes.
Maybe some anti-ants. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slonick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He is the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off.
Yeah, it reminds me of that Big Balls guy. Do you remember him?
That is my pilgrim soul, sir.
Okay, Jesus.
Wow.
Where do we sign up?
Fuck you.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.